Welcome to episode 3 of Media Impressions. TV and radio no longer refer to the medium consumed. How do we reach consumers most effectively when video and audio transcend platforms?
So 50 years ago, give or take a couple of months, the single most watched broadcast in U.S. television history occurred, the 1969 moon EVA for Apollo 11. I was watching from Earth to the Moon the other day, and it just kind of brought me back to what that moment meant, and the engineer in me was just really kind of caught up on it, and it led me to think about how much our culture, our consumption of media has really changed. Because that moment, that broadcast across multiple networks reached 75% of the U.S. population. It's estimated at about 150 million people tuned in to watch the moon landing in 1969. And you know, there were only 200 million people at that point. So 75% of the population tuning in to watch that one moment in unison. It's incredibly powerful, and it speaks to what media can be. But as we've gone forward over those next 50 years, those audiences continued to fragment. And frankly, it's been 30 years almost since we've seen shares in the 50s and 60s where people were tuning in unison to watch those programs. You have to go back to, you know, the series finale of Cheers, 1993, or MASH. Some epic series coming to a conclusion in a time where people got together on the couch at 8 p.m., at 9 p.m. to watch these programs, to experience them together in the limited opportunity to watch it while it was airing. That time's not here. It's frankly different now. We still watch perhaps more video than ever before, and we're watching it on different platforms and different niches. There's more content here than we could ever consume. And so video remains an important part of the media mix. It remains a very important part of how we tell the story of our culture and how, as advertisers, we can frankly weave our messaging into it. But the rationale for its usage and the most effective way to deploy it, it's not the same.
For our first interview, Greg talks streaming video with two of our digital planners, Corey Buller and Kerry Kapsinski.
We are now in the post-Walking Dead world of, we'll call it Premier TV. Like, Walking Dead was big because it was the first big cable show that rivaled the networks and so on. And now we've got all of these shows scattered across the Peacocks and the HBO Maxes and the Hulus and the Netflixes of the world, plus the networks, plus the cable network. Corey, how does this stuff make it on your radar? You have your core, you have your wrestling, and you have your 90 Day Fiancé, but what breaks through? How do you figure out what to watch next?
My wife, she's the ultimate influencer in the household. She's a consummate consumer of social media. So she usually is getting like recommendations from the people she follows online.
Yeah. And I just feel like too, like I myself am so hyper aware of what's on TV, and I always have been. I still watch live television all the time. I mean, whether it's like reruns or up-to-date programming, like I'm still watching TV like through having cable.
There's like a comfort in live television.
I fall asleep to Friends every night on Nick at Night.
Yeah.
I'm revealing a lot about myself right now, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, it's like too, like when you turn on live TV, it's just on, you know, like Netflix, right. Hulu, they'll just play the next thing.
Yeah,
there's like no variety. You're just watching every episode of a TV show.
Finally, Netflix realized that people fall asleep to shows and you lose your spot. So I think they have like that weird are you still watching solution.
Yeah.
That I do appreciate, even though it can be kind of mean when you're binging something during the middle of the day.
I mean, first, it's word of mouth, right? That's how we find out about this stuff. And that's the old water cooler phenomenon. You know, back in the day, you'd watch The Sopranos or American Idol and you'd come in and talk about it. That still happens, but it's kind of more of an independent experience. Like, we're all watching Tiger King, which I also have not watched and will never watch for the record. But we're all watching it at different points at different times. So how much of your viewing experience is kind of, again, that solitary or Corey with your wife behavior where you're relaxing, you're unwinding, it's your time? And are there other things that break through and it's more of a shared experience where you're co-watching with other people or you're looking forward to have that conversation the next day? Does that still exist for you?
TV watching is really strange because there's only one time of the week where I watch it totally by myself. You know, like I have my Wednesday night Dynamite on TNT. I need to promote that. Wrestling is back on TNT and it's incredible. Everyone should watch it.
I hope you're being paid for this plug.
I am absolutely not. If it was up to me, I'd have the t-shirt on, but I didn't, you know, wasn't sure about the video thing. But any other time that I watch TV, it's usually with somebody else, whether it's with, well, really just my wife at this point because of the circumstance. So it's kind of like always a shared experience, though TV in a lot of cases, especially right now, because unless you're watching like a 90 Day Fiancé, it's kind of background noise. So it's almost like it's a shared experience in that we're sharing the same space and having generally the same time. But sometimes it's I'll be reading a book while the TV's on and she'll be on her phone, or like we're playing with our cats and the TV's on and we're not really watching it. So it's almost like the background to our other activities.
When you're thinking about going to market with a campaign, how you think about video, do you treat the online services that have ads differently than you would that you know, network TV experience? Kind of walk me through your thought process when you're taking your own lived-in experience and projecting it or looking at your audience through a different lens. How do you think about video?
I think from my perspective, I try not to overcomplicate it. I think as media buyers and planners and marketers and everyone in this industry, like it's so easy for us to fall into the trap of overcomplicating things because it is complicated. And then we put our spin on it and make it even worse. At the end of the day, someone's going to watch something because they want to watch it. So it's really more about the content as opposed to how they get it. It really doesn't matter if I had to watch Yellowstone on my laptop for 2 weeks for the first two seasons, and now I can switch to my TV. Like I'm leaned into Yellowstone. I'm fully invested. I'm watching it. So I think sometimes we need to take that more into account, how we structure what we think about video, and think more about the fact that like people are so bought in into these network shows, into these longer run programs that they're binging, and really more lean into that binge watching experience as opposed to just buying terrestrial TV or linear television or whatever those things are that you're buying, and really think about like how engaged that audience is in those very particular moments, and maybe try to reach those people who are watching for 4 hours at a time.
The approach to video is going to vary significantly based on the type of message you have to get across. Like to Carrie's point,
yeah,
between active and passive viewing, there are different messages that are going to work in both of those environments. There are certain messages where you can hear half of it in the background and it's totally just going to set in your mind. And then there are going to be other messages where you're going to have to be clued in for the full 30 seconds to understand exactly what the brand is trying to get across. You know, when we're thinking about that, I think it also depends on at what part of the consumer journey video is going to offer the most impact.
Yes, but think about your own self. You're not just watching live TV. You're doing it across all of these other things, all these other devices. And it's really important to bring that all into the mix and like bucket that under television. Like it's not its own thing like it used to be. It's all one. So that's kind of where I see it, is more of this education of where I say it's not that complicated. Like I try to think of myself a lot and all of the decisions that I make and say, like, I am a 20 something year old female who lives in the city. I have a good baseline for what people my age probably are doing. What if I'm doing it, I would say there's a 50% likelihood the rest of the audience is. Think about yourself a little bit and use that as your guiding light. Like I think we just get too into the weeds and have to pull ourselves out a little bit and just say, okay, we're all watching across all of these things. Let's run media across all of these things and see what works.
To Carrie's last point, keeping it simple and just running the media and seeing what works is part of the excitement of my job. It's part of the reason that I love to show up in the morning. There's so many different ways for us to use media tactics to both engage people in generating awareness and having that first touch exposure that sets the entire purchasing process in motion, and then also closing the deal at the opportune time with the right message to the right person. And TV is no longer just about that high-level brand awareness, that mass reach. There's lean-forward programming where people are so engaged that the best you can do is catch their attention and hope that it lasts long enough for a break for them to go investigate it. And then there are things that are more lean back that we put on the background that are enjoyable in their own way, but maybe not fully engaging us. And we might be more likely to pull away from that. And so the types of metrics that we get, the types of expectations that we set, also change the tactics that we use. So this next segment, we'll talk to some of our buying experts to hear how that shapes the choices that they make in how they take our clients to market.
Next is Veronika Zeryuzinskaya. Nika, as she's known, is a manager on our programmatic team, Desk One.
Where you realize that, like, this isn't really a demand-based campaign or a response campaign. Maybe this could be part of that larger buy.
Yeah, actually, there were several situations when we were planning something first, and after we, like, when we get more into conversations with different channels involved, we were changing gears and like running something completely new. And more recently, we're trying to be like more cooperate, like to cooperate more with the traditional TV team and know what type of video buy they're doing, or if they were historically buying something, and we're able to use that information to extend like reach for our digital video using linear TV buy. It really depends on the campaign and depends on their like workflow of their whole planning. If we're late at the game, we're usually more practical and we go this practical route. We're just looking into the assets, we look into historicals and just activate something. If it's something new and our ideal path, and we're able to meet several times and like work with more teams, I think we're more flexible and we try to think global.
And so I think that's a great point is if you don't have that time to collaborate, then you get a functional buy, right? But that strategic buy requires the bigger conversation. And certainly on the digital side, there's no shortage of data, but you need that context to pick the right points and to know where to look. So to kind of bring this all together, there's trade-off, a balance between the programmatic side and the, shall we say, more traditional TV buying. Both have their strengths and weaknesses. And as we've landed larger clients, whether it's a health system that places 1,000 buys a year, or it's a retailer with 800 locations in 150 different markets, we need to be able to seamlessly execute an integrated video experience. Our solution has been to harness our history in local TV buying to draw on that local expertise our people have crafted in each of the markets that they buy by giving them technology that unifies the video impressions across the platforms that are available. While at the same time, we counter the natural instinct of our digital planners and our digital buyers to run ever more targeted digital video with the scope and perspective of what a broader overlay can provide in terms of benchmarking the effectiveness of the targeting they wish to use, if not just scaling that buy to more sustainable levels.
Next up is Chief Revenue Officer Scott Davis to explain how this all started.
Like, our conversation today goes back quite a bit to an email you shot me about 10 years ago where you suggested kind of blending the tactics together and could we bring digital video into the same buy that they were running on TV. Try to remember as best you can what you were thinking 10 years ago, let alone 10 minutes ago. Why did that come up? Was it just because we needed to reach more people in new ways? Was it just to get more weight? Like, why did you first think about blending together the digital and the linear worlds of TV and video?
Yeah, to answer that, I'm actually going to have to go back a bit further than 10 years. So before I started at Harmelin many, many years ago, my first job in the industry was at an organization called the Cornell Radio Guild, where I was part of a community-run radio station and started my advertising career there. I would maintain connection with that station, and I still do to this day. But every year, we would all gather in Ithaca, New York for a symposium. And the very first symposium, which was sometime around 2007, as I recall, one of the presentations from a true friend and mentor named Steve Marks, who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, was about the tsunami of change that was coming specifically to the radio industry at that time through advanced technologies. And that presentation was really a turning point for me in how I thought about media. The subtext of the presentation was, this is a presentation that the radio stations who were Steve's clients. Steve ran the Center for Sales Strategy in Tampa, Florida. This was a presentation that his clients were not ready to see yet, because it talked about all the disruption that was coming in the radio world specifically, but certainly applicable to everything through Pandora and through Spotify, which was really just nascent at that time, and through all the internet opportunities where all of a sudden a small radio market might have 10,000 different radio sources competing for listeners. That presentation was really a turning point for how I thought about these things. And thinking about it in the context of Harmelin, I wanted to challenge myself and the organization to make sure that we were always one step ahead of these technological changes. And so that's really when I started thinking about how do we adapt what we have always thought of as television and radio for this coming age of what we now refer to as video and audio. And part of that was trying to simplify how we would go about buying these things. There are many advantages to buying these digital formats in terms of additional targeting that you can do, how granular you can get, the feedback that you get when you serve ads. But that complexity was actually a barrier more than an advantage in some cases to getting clients to adopt. How do we get our clients to adopt them more quickly? Therefore, how do we make the process of buying them more similar to what we're all used to in television and radio? And that's really where this process started.
And so like the flip side of that is you come, we have this conversation and we think it's possible. To your point, we have to really simplify digital to make it fit within linear, because linear can't do the thing, broadcast can't do the things that digital can do necessarily. So we build the tool to do this. We put together a buy for you. We say, I think it was 10% of the time, 10% of the points are going against digital. Do you remember what it was like walking to the room with the client and explaining that you were bringing these worlds together, and then all the really fancy buzzwords about digital, we're going to strip them away. what was that like? What was the first couple conversations on the client side like?
Yeah, those were some challenging conversations. We're very fortunate that the client that we were first taking this to is one who we had built literally two decades worth of trust with at this time. So there was a lot of receptivity to what we wanted to do, and how we wanted to expand our use of these new forms of media, especially new to local advertisers. So there were some interesting conversations. There was a lot of education that had to happen, but I would say it was a positive experience.
What was it like taking this idea to a client and trying to present it for the first time as part of one cohesive strategy?
I had hoped it would, and I'm really proud at how the agency and our clients adapted this. It's good for our clients. It was the right thing to do. But I really think the key was how simple we made it for everybody to incorporate things like Pandora or Hulu or some of our other partners into a traditional radio or television buy. So it's a great success and something that I think launched us toward where we are today in this all screen video world where it's not even a second thought that all of these new platforms are a part of any video or audio strategy.
For our last interview, Greg sat down with Janine Cross, Vice President, Digital Activation.
Can you talk a little bit about, from a cross-device standpoint, how what you're watching on your big screen affects maybe how we reach people on the small screen?
Yeah, absolutely. So a really popular tactic lately has been ACR, so automated contact recognition, which we're able to do programmatically, as well as you can work directly with a vendor like Samba, who you also can work with programmatically with measurement as well. But that's been a very popular avenue lately, just because it is understanding what's going through someone's cable box and then being able to target those behaviors. We're able to target users based on actually seeing a competitor spot. And so reaching them and kind of trying to conquest in that way and being present when your competitor is present. We also can use that technology to, you know, avoid, you know, increased frequency. So basically only incremental reach that you're not getting exposed with your television. And so the benefit here is that you can use that data, that TV data and what people are watching, what people are doing, and then reach them across other avenues. So there you can do just CTV, you can do OTT, you can do just display and video and other digital avenues. And so that's been a popular strategy. And also there is a feedback loop. You can do certain measurement on reach and frequency and other tools there to kind of understand how your linear and your digital are kind of all playing in you know, harmony together.
So to kind of take that to its like strategic application, then are you seeing more clients use what I'll call traditional TV, but your typical spot buy is essentially a kickstart to the flywheel, you know, run that big schedule, get the high awareness, kind of see and observe what's happening while it's in market, and then extend the life of that flight with more targeted digital on the heels of it? Or is everything kind of happening in parallel? How does all this play together as you're optimizing over the life of a campaign?
Great question. So basically, it's different for each of our clients and each of their strategies. In some cases, that is the standpoint. You kind of have your mass reach coming from linear. You're basically able to kind of scale much quicker in linear and how it's delivered than you can in digital because it's one person at a time versus that mass audience. But we see a lot of advertisers using that, using their base as their linear and then increasing their allocation of OTT. Everything we've seen in the data this year has shown that consumers have shifted their behavior. 25% of TV viewing is now through OTT. So it's really an audience that can no longer be ignored. So I would say most clients use linear as their base and then these augmentation strategies for digital. But we're also seeing some clients leading with digital. We've seen certain clients, some big advertisers, almost abandoning some of their linear avenues to focus in on OTT and this kind of consumer shift. And I think that increased allocation OTT and not as heavy in linear is going to, we're probably going to continue to see that expand as, you know, COVID has really, I think, has changed consumer behavior forever. I don't know if people are going to convert back to ways that they were before. So I think our positioning has been unique in the industry for a long time. But in general, I think we've always approached things a little differently than the marketplace. You know, we sit as an agency. We're not the conglomerates, but we are still a large shop. And we basically, in that case, are not challenged by some of the kingdoms that might exist within the larger conglomerates. And so in that case, I think we're able to be a little more nimble between working with digital and traditional and planning and all trying to find solutions to kind of really have a collaborative solution and a solution that's not, you know, your eye on digital or eye on traditional, but really kind of focusing on it in the sense of what is best for the client and how do consumers perceive and view TV these days, as you know, they're not going to call it OTT, they just call it TV. And so with that, I think we've really, working with vendors, taken a unique standpoint. We've heard from a lot of them saying that we ask questions that others are not asking. And so that's a good position for us. It's hard. We have to really push for what we're looking to do, what's right for our clients and making sure it's fair. But we're happy to have those hard conversations. And even, you know, in the cases, those are one-to-one relationships in the programmatic world. I mean, some of the work we're doing in video, we're working, you know, with all the tools that exist from Google standpoint, from YouTube, OTT. We have a great relationship with the trade desk. So we're working like regularly on new ways that we can push with the trade desk and kind of integrate our clients into those spaces. One of our newest areas has been the Amazon DSP and working with their Fire TV and OTT products. And so that's been a popular opportunity for clients as well, as that's really matured. So I think that we are positioned in a good spot for our clients, for the agency to kind of make some moves, maybe quicker than some of the larger shops are able to.
It's particularly easy to look at how things are different, to get overwhelmed by the choice in front of us and the sheer volume of nuance that can overwhelm even the most seasoned media planner. Sometimes it helps to take a step back and look at the similarities in terms of how people view content, why they choose to watch what they choose to watch or listen to what they choose to listen to. And by focusing on that user experience, it gives us a through line into what would make a effective media strategy. And so as we continue to make these advances to bring the world of media together with its coming future, we also are spending more time looking at the other side of our history, which is the local activation. So on our next episode, we'll dive deeper into how we're taking these advances in OTT and connected TV and video in general, and we're applying it at local levels so that we're capturing the opportunity when and where it shows up, and not just applying a one-size-fits-all approach to media.
Huge thank you to our guests, Corey Buller, Carrie Kapsinski, Nika Zuryuzinskaya, Scott Davis, and Janine Cross. Media Impressions is hosted by Greg Ebeck and produced by Gwen Lufkin, Emily Wolfe, Chelsea Fletcher, and me, Jared Rudenstein. Harmony Media thanks you for listening to episode 3 of Media Impressions.